Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You, my friend, are listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems, who make some of the most powerful gaming PCs on the planet. And I can say from personal experience that they have awesome customer service. Use the code MMOReporter at doghousesystems.com and get a free 120GB SSD. And by Audible, the best audiobook service in existence. Seriously, if you like stories at all, you've got to check Audible out. Go to audibletrial.com/MMOReporter and get a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook. Those ads help cover our server costs for the show, but if you'd like to directly support this show and the nice people who make it, you can go to gamediplomat.com/donate and show us some love. Thank you very much. Hello and welcome to episode 62 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I am your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I am joined once again by, dare I say it, dare I, my favorite co-host, Scott Lance.
What? Oh, high praise. Hello, everybody.
Hello. I know, it is high praise. We were just talking before the show about how many awesome guests we've had on lately. It's been really cool.
Yeah, quality's been pretty high.
Yeah. Unlike those other jerks at the start, know what I'm saying?
Those guys.
Yeah. Careful. My wife was the first guest. You don't want to make her angry.
I said guys.
Just
the guys.
There you go. Close call. Scott, you're back, buddy. How have you been?
Oh, man, it's been a tough go at work, you know, but enjoying life and digging the holiday season. Glad to be here.
Yeah. You got a tree and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. Got family coming in. I get to see my uncle, who I haven't seen in probably about 15 years, and he runs an orphanage for kids in Africa.
Well, that's awesome. What brings him back now?
He actually runs a school, so he does a lot of fundraising trips back in the States to get money for everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I guess, actually, Scott, I should be saying Merry Feast of Wintervale?
Yeah.
Or is it Happy Feast of Wintervale? I can't remember.
Something like that.
It's pretty cool. So before we get into that, though, let's talk about why we're happy this week. I'll go first. I got rank 15 with my Spellmage deck. This is the deck that I built. What was the last expansion? I'm totally blanking on the name. Not
Grand
League
Tournament?
Yeah, the Grand Tournament. Right after the Grand Tournament came out, I built a Spellmage deck. And it was the first deck in a while that I've just built from scratch just to see if I could do it. And I never really got really far with it, but I went on a six-game win streak over the weekend and got rank 15 with it. So I was pretty happy. It felt good.
That Spellmage deck is no joke, and it got a little better with the new expansion.
Yeah, I threw in the Forgotten Torch in there. That's been really nice. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and the new guy that just gives you a random, discover. It's not random, you discover a spell. We'll talk about him, but he's pretty good too.
Yeah, I actually haven't tried him in there. I should do that.
Yep.
Sweet, there we go. Scott, why are you happy?
Well, hey, like I said, it's the holiday season. I got family coming in, got some time off of work. The kids getting, you know, old enough to really appreciate the season, so seeing things through her eyes is pretty cool. I love it all. I get to stay home this year. That's a big one. I've been traveling every Christmas for like 5 years.
Oh, man. Yeah. So nice. I thought for sure, so we went out and got a Christmas tree. We decorated, put lights, put all the ornaments on. We talked ahead of time because our son is 1.5 years old. Starting to run around and all that stuff. We're like, okay, don't put any ornaments on the tree that we care about this year. Because he's going to be tearing it down. Last year, we discovered he could move. Because we set him down, looked away for a second, turned back and he was gone. But he had wiggled himself behind the Christmas tree so he could start pulling on it. So we knew it was going to be bad. We set it all up, did this whole thing, had our whole plan for where we're going to put it so we could block with furniture. Our son walks in the door and I go, look, a tree! And he kind of glances at it and just moves on. He doesn't care. He doesn't like Christmas. What's wrong with this child?
Did you have your lights on it yet?
Yeah, we have glowing lights. There's a couple ornaments that like spin and stuff. He could not be less interested. This is not my child. I don't understand.
Yeah, give him one more year. He'll turn around.
That's fair. Yeah, I guess I should just be happy he's not destroying it. all right, so in-game, we've got the Wintervale event happening. Event may be a strong word for it. It's more of a sale. You can, if you buy the $50 package, it normally gets you 40 packs. It gets you 50 now. That's cool. There's a little snow on a couple of the boards, and the emotes are a little different, but not really much happening.
Yeah, I'm pretty underwhelmed, I gotta say.
Yeah, I saw the announcement, Wintervale coming to Hearthstone, I was like, what? Because literally, my favorite content in MMOs ever is Christmas content. I just love it. And so I was so excited to log in and be like, okay, oh, cool, there's stockings over the fireplace. What happens when I click them? Oh, nothing happens. They're just there. That's cool, I guess.
I guess.
But hey, I'm going to count it. It is the happy hearthstone after all, Scott. We're getting dangerously close to being negative here.
That's true.
Let's count this as the first stepping stone towards next year's event. So, if you could create an event in the game, what would you do?
Oh, man. Yeah, with Christmas, I'd probably try and do, try and put like Santa hats on some of the things, maybe on the gold versions, have some snow coming down, maybe have just like little jingle bells kind of fire on occasion. There's a lot more that they could have done.
Yeah, I want to see like basically a daily quest you can do, which is like a dungeon, but it's all about like, I forget what their name of their Santa Claus is.
Great Father Winter.
Yeah, thank you. Great Father Winter. If he's like an NPC on your side of the board and you have to protect him, right? And you have to keep him alive with all your spells. Like, I'd like to see some sort of little mode like that, I think would be fun.
Well, you know, and time's not up yet. They might do something with the Tavern Brawl next week.
Oh, that's true, actually. We do know that there are Christmas card backs, and you'll get it from Tavern Brawl. Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet you're right! Oh, I hope you're right, Scott. I'm so happy now.
So they might... There's still a chance for them to not let us down.
And even if they don't do it, they didn't necessarily let us down. They just didn't make my heart burst with joy, which is what I was hoping. But all right, let's dive into it, Scott, because we got a long 20 hours ahead of us for this episode.
We got a lot of cards.
Yeah. We got a lot of cards. We're doing the review for League of Explorers. We're doing this like we normally do with adventure modes. We've fallen into our trend, which is now first episode, we cover all the neutral cards by rarity. And then the next episode, we'll do all the class cards broken apart by classes. And so since we're in the Christmas spirit, we're doing one episode this week, and we're doing the next episode next week. So you'll get it right before Christmas, our little gift to you. So let's dive in. Or actually, let me remind people real fast. We're giving cards two scores. So in this mode, we give two scores. The arena score, which is the score for that card if you were just drafting an arena and you came across it. So that usually... It means that it's not in a deck that's built for it. You can't really rely on synergies. Just how is it decently if in a vacuum? And then the constructed score is in a pre-built deck that wants that card most. So if it's a mage card, it's not how does that card do in Frost Mage or Freeze Mage, but it's how well does that card do in a deck that is built to make that card good? Which you would think... The natural gut instinct is, oh, all the cards will be good if you build a whole deck around it. But that is definitely not true, as we will find out. There are some cards that are just beyond redemption in some ways.
Or they don't have a whole lot going on with synergy or whatnot.
That's true. They're destined for mediocrity, which is not bad.
And as a quick calibration, let's see, the fives are the totally home runs. Those are the Sludge Belchers, the Dr. Booms. I think I even gave Holy Champion a five, those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Threes are... either vanilla or on par with vanilla. You know, maybe they have slightly worse stats, but a slight trade-off, and okay, that balances out. Ones are pretty darn bad. You'd hardly ever want to play them. Honestly, you avoid them at all opportunities if you can, but maybe in arena you have to take a one. And zeros are rare, but to us they're just horrifically unplayable, and they're the ones you make fun of if you see them after school.
Yeah. Wow. We're getting into bully territory here.
I'm just having flashbacks to my childhood, man.
Were you a zero, Scott?
I may have been.
Is that why you gave all these cards zeros to, like, bring them all down to your level?
Revenge!
You think you're so cool, Anubis that Sentinel. Yeah.
No, it's better than a zero.
That's true. I know. All right, so actually, that's our first card. So let's jump right into it. Why don't you take us in?
Sure, man. So Anubiseth Sentinel is a rather badass-looking card. It is a 5-mana cost, 4/4 minion with a death rattle. Give a random minion +3/+3. So, you know, for those of you who know how I like to rate cards on the efficiency scale, we would be expecting something like a 5-6 on the vanilla scale from this mana cost. Instead, we get a 4-4, which is a little below, but the death rattle sort of brings it up so that you get 7/7 worth of value if it fires. So, you know, on the surface, what that means is if you can get it to fire, it is an exceptionally good value because you're essentially getting 7/7 for 5 mana. And normally something like this, it's a little bit of a downside, right? Because what if it's entombed or it's silenced or polymorphed, you don't get the death rattle. But with some of the new cards that like clone death rattle or with Baron Rivendare or with Kael'thas, you can actually turn death rattle into a multi-fire effect. And this is one of the bigger death rattles in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because when you're looking for stuff to copy with the Unearthed Raptor, I mean, this is near the top of the list. It's one of the best.
Yeah, he was top of mind when I added him to the deck. And there's some other really good stuff out there, too. But +3/+3 is no joke.
Yeah, and there are some cool specific effects. Like, I didn't think about this until I read someone talking about it. Effigy on Mage, which when a minion dies, summons something of the same cost, actually works with this so that it will summon the minion and then give it a 3/3. So there are some really cool ways to almost guarantee the proc.
Yeah, that's cool.
So what do you think it's score-wise?
I said 4 in Arena, because in Arena you often have minions on the board. That's kind of the name of the game there. And in Constructed, I gave it a 4 as well. You're not, because you can put in a deck that has a lot of people or death rattle, or a lot of minions rather, or death rattle shenanigans, so you're more likely to get it to fire.
Yeah, I'm on board with both those. I think it's a strong minion that is decent on its own, just because it doesn't ask for much. All it asks is someone else be on the board. That's not hard to do.
Yeah, if there's a downside, it's just that it's not quite as good when you're behind, because if you're behind, your opponent's probably keeping your side clear of minions, and that's when you need the most help, and that's when this guy does not deliver and you just spent a little extra on him. But if you're in a deck that can keep minions on the board, you should be okay.
Nice. All right, up next, Fossilized Devilsaur. So just a reminder, these are all the common cards. We're going alphabetical, and then we'll jump into the rares after this. Fossilized Devilsaur, giant creature, an 8-cost, 8/8, battle cry, if you control a beast, gain taunt. So, I don't know, this card tries really hard, right? It's an 8/8 for 8 with taunt. Wow, that's a druid card normally. But the stats are actually below vanilla, right? Vanilla would be an 8/9. The requirements are kind of tough for most classes. Most classes don't want to be running a ton of beasts.
Mm-hmm.
And the benefit you get for forcing it is just taunt. I mean, I don't know. I'm pretty underwhelmed.
Yeah, it's an Ironbark Protector that only is as good as an Ironbark Protector in some cases. As you mentioned, only two classes really care about beasts, and that's Druid and it's Hunter, except that Druid already has a better version of this card. So this is clearly meant to be a Hunter card, and I'm not sure I want an 8-mana 8/8 conditional with Taunt that's not a beast in a Hunter deck.
Yeah, because even Control Hunter isn't super beast-heavy either.
Yeah. I think in Arena, this might be an interesting higher-end pick that some people might like. But to me, that's kind of what it's for, is Arena.
Okay, yeah, but even... Are you just drafting it there because it's an 8/8 for 8? Because, I mean, you're pretty unlikely to get the beast combo in Arena, right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you might pick a beast. You know, if you pick this guy early, you maybe can pick a beast.
Yeah.
But and I'm not saying it's great in Arena. I'm saying I think that's its best use is in Arena.
Yeah, that's fair. This is the sort of card where it feels almost old, right? Where Ironbark Protector back in Vanilla was really good card. It was really important because at 8 cost, there weren't a lot of high-cost minions that you could play with. But nowadays, there's just so many new cards out there where this guy just doesn't, you know, keep up with the new kids. He's the Scott, if you will, of elementary school.
Yikes!
Just kidding. All right, what score? So, let me run some scores by you, see what you think. Arena 1? Or do you think Arena 2? Constructed has to be a 1, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's better options than Constructed. I want a King Crush if I'm going to spend this much mana on a Hunter deck. Yeah, so 1 in Constructed I'm in. personally, I'd be inclined to call it a 2-in arena. It's, you look at something like War Golem, which isn't great, but that's kind of what vanilla gets you up there, is a 7-7 for 7. This is an 8-8-8 for 8. It does, under some conditions, have marginal upside. I'd call a War Golem a 2 or a 3. This is maybe a 2, and this is just the tiniest hair better than that.
Okay. All right. I think. I'm on board with that. Let's meet a 2.
All right. Sold. All right. Next up, Gorillabot A3. This is a 4-mana cost, 3-4 mech, so you're paying a 1-mana premium over what his stats would otherwise imply, for the effect of a battle cry. If you control another mech, then discover a mech. Well, I don't know. Pretty good, I think. The mana premium hurts. In Arena, where these kind of cards where they require you to have like beast synergy or in this case mech synergy, those are not the best investment for Arena. But in Constructed, I think it's pretty good. What do you think, Josh?
Pretty good, my friend Scott. This card is amazing in Constructed. So just think back to Mech Mage, right? And all the cards you want to be running in there. Having a mech on the board is no problem. And Discover favors class cards so heavily. Which actually makes this card super interesting to me, because there aren't very many class mechs, and some classes have a lot better mechs than others. I was actually running this in a rogue deck. I was trying a rogue deck that was using Unearthed Raptor and mechs, so a lot of Death Rattle, a lot of mechs. But pulling up the... Oh, man, I don't even remember the name. Ninja Bot, whatever the rogue mech is, that gives +2/+2 to everybody. I mean, you can almost guaranteed pull that every time. The only thing that mech decks run into is you run out of cards. And this guy, man, this is 100% a mech deck staple, I think.
Yeah, so that's a good point. 1 mana to draw a card is pretty good. I haven't figured out Discover. I think I feel like Discover is not quite as good as drawing a card out of your own deck. The theory being, when you built your own deck, you stacked it with the best possible cards. And here, maybe it's something you would have put in your deck, but honestly, it's probably not going to be something you put in your deck.
Yeah.
Although Discover also does tend to give you stuff that's above average. So in the best case, it'll give you a third copy of a card that you already have in your deck and you wanted, and it fits really well, but you just couldn't have had more copies. I think what I don't like is the downside of if you control another mech. And I know mech decks have a generally pretty easy time with that. And if you've got cheap mechs in your deck, you can play one of those and then play this right afterwards. But it is a little bit of a liability.
It is, yeah. I definitely would not run this outside of a mech deck. Because there are some people like trying to combo with a small number of them. It's not worth it. To me, the Discover effects I like most are the Discover effects that are very specific. I don't like the ones that are like, sorry, I do like them, but I don't like them as much. The ones that are like, draw a 3-cost card, draw a 1-cost card. Mm-hmm. This is Discover a mech, so you have a much better idea of what you're going to be getting. So you can look through the mechs. There really aren't that many bad mechs. And like the 3 worst, you could get like Clockwork Giant, Clockwork Knight maybe, and Alarmobot. Mm-hmm. Like, but your chances of getting those 3, outside of that, like, you're going to find one that you're happy to throw on the board.
And you had a good point about the class. Like, for those that don't know, Blizzard's come out and said that class cards have, I think, 4 times the chance of any other card individually of being selected as part of Discover. So you can look at what are the mechs in your class, and if you like those, then this becomes an even better proposition.
Yeah, dude. I mean, look at Whirling Zap-O-Matic on Shaman. That card is amazing. I would love to draw that.
Yep.
Actually, yeah, so that's interesting in the Shaman deck. Whirling Zap-O-Matic is a 2-cost, 3-2 with Wind Fury. If you played this guy on turn 6, you almost guarantee you're going to be playing this and a Whirling Zap-O-Matic for that cost.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Did we do scores? No, we didn't do scores. So, I think this card has a much harder time in Arena, right? Because it's inherently just relying on synergy. So, I mean, it's way under cost, or sorry, it's overcosted by 1. Just on vanilla stats. So I'd probably give it a 2 in Arena. How does that sound?
Feels right.
Constructed. All right, let's see if I could take you with me, buddy, on the hype train. Choo-choo, we're going to 5.
I was kind of leaning towards a 4 originally, but I think this might be a 5. I think you might be right.
In the deck that wants it most. So in a mech-heavy deck, I think this guy is god.
Yeah, I think you're right.
All right. Up next, We got Huge Toad, the card with the best golden art in the entire game. Have you seen it, Scott?
I have. He's like eating, I don't even know what he's eating.
I think it's a gnome. Yeah. It's always funnier with gnomes. So it is a 2-cost, 3/2 beast with a death rattle. Deal 1 damage to a random enemy. I mean, so first off, Bloodfin Raptor is officially dead, right? Because this is just a better version of Bloodfin Raptor.
I mean, but it's got everything. It's got the type, the stats, the cost, the beast, everything. Yeah.
The art? Come on. Yeah, I mean, it is just straight up a better version. Where it seems like Blizzard is okay with printing better versions of the free cards, but they haven't actually printed a better version of any cards you had to get with packs or anything. Which seems like that's fine to me. I'm totally fine upgrading from the free cards.
Well, as a quick detour, have you seen the video by Ben Brode?
No.
Yeah, so he talked about this very explicitly. And basically what they're willing to do is make strictly better versions of what he calls bad cards. And, you know, it's funny because Bloodfin Raptor is probably the least bad of the cards that they've done strict upgrades of. It was 3/2 Beast Vanilla. It wasn't too bad, but especially in Arena, you saw it in some decks. Yeah. Nobody ever used it constructed after, you know, I don't know, Naxx came out or something. So they made some pretty good points about being willing to make upgraded versions of those, and this fits into that. It's fine. If nobody's actually playing Bloodfin Raptor, then why is making a better version of it bad? Like, okay, now there's a version of it you might play with.
Yeah. Very true. I agree.
Yeah. So that's where they are.
All right. So what do you think of this card?
It's not bad. I mean, the 1 damage to a random enemy is... It's just not a huge impact. I think it'll occasionally give you that moment, you know, because there's usually like that one thing on the board with 1 hit point that you're hoping it hits, right? And so I almost think like it's a good lottery ticket card, and it's a good drama card because it'll sometimes create that moment of drama. But I just don't think it's very high impact. You can't control it. You maybe control the timing because you can choose to trade it as long as it's been out for a turn. But it's too small of an effect and too outside of your control to be put to good use. So I don't think there's really any meaningful synergy with that.
Yeah, I agree. I think, it's almost just, it's like a small little added value. It's almost, this may be crazy, Scott. Is it almost like giving it another hit point if it was like a 3/3 for 2?
I think that's pretty fair because it's taking a hit point away from an enemy. It's just out of your control and everything. So it's just a hair worse than that.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, in Arena though, I'm a pretty big fan, right? Because like you mentioned, it's basically just dudes beating each other in Arena, and this guy's great at that at a 2-cost.
Yeah, I mean, what score are you saying?
Oh, just a 3. Sorry, he is acceptable, right? Where like Bloodfin Raptor, you know, maybe a little under 3, but this guy's a solid 3. I'm not turning him down if I need a 2-drop.
Yeah, he's definitely not as good as a Knife Juggler, but I'd say he's kind of a... To me, vanilla, the vanilla test for a 1 and 2 cost is actually like the, you know, a 1/2 for a 1 cost or a 2/3 or 3/2 for a 2 cost with a special ability. It's actually the vanilla test doesn't quite apply to the 1 and 2 cost cards. So this has that tiny little extra ability that to me does make it a true 3.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I think that's very true because stuff like Northshire Cleric is clearly above, you know, the normal curve.
Oh, big time. Yeah, it's also a class card. Class cards get a bomb. Yeah.
All right. Constructed, though, I mean, he's still a 2-cost 3/2, so he can't go lower than a 2, right?
Yeah, I just don't think he helps any deck other than maybe, I mean, I guess theoretically a beast deck, but the fact that he's a beast is all he has going for him. Yeah. He's just not doing anything interesting or special beyond that.
Besides eating gnomes, what?
True. But I'd much rather spend like an extra mana and get a Jungle Raptor, the 4/2 stealth.
Oh, yeah.
Or Jungle Panther, I think it's called.
Jungle Panther, yeah.
Yeah, like it's only 1 extra tough or power for the 1 extra mana, but the stealth just radically changes it. And to me, that's a card that's going to kind of never get old or go out of fashion. I love myself some Jungle Panther. This guy, no. All right. Trade up, being trade up with a 2/1 too easily or whatever.
Yeah, very true. All right, what's next?
Next up is a jeweled scabbard, or scarab, sorry.
Jeweled scabbard would be a very uninteresting minion. He sits there. He does nothing.
So this is a 2-cost 1-1, which is not impressive, with a battle cry of discover a 3-cost card. So I hear a lot of people talking that you want to play this guy in turn 2, and then you'll have a above-average turn 3 play. But that's kind of a weird proposition to me, to play a bad card so that you can play, hopefully, an above-average card the next turn, but you just don't know what it's going to be and doesn't necessarily work with your deck.
Yeah, I don't know how that would be an above-average 3-drop. Wouldn't whatever you have in your deck as the 3-drop be better?
Well, if you're playing Arena, not necessarily. And I'm sort of thinking in a vacuum. When I say above average, I mean like above a 3. Because when you're shown a choice of 3 cards and you can take the highest, it isn't very rare that that's going to be only like a 1 or 2 on our 5-point scale.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't know. It just, to throw away, throw away is maybe a wrong term, but it feels like you're throwing away your second turn. Momentum is so important, and just giving up almost your entire second turn to get a slightly better third turn, I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I will say, though, there are a few classes like Druid that have really strong 3-drops. So I could see maybe in classes like that it working better because again, we're relying on giving class cards more often than neutral cards.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that you have a decent pool coming. They also care about beasts. So, I mean, this could work in a Druid Beast deck, maybe. The bummer is Hunter actually has some of the worst 3-drops of any class. Mm-hmm. And obviously, they're the other Beasts class.
So, I'm using this guy. And I'm trying to remember which deck I'm using him. I think it's my Druid Beast deck, although it might be my Hunter Beast deck. And it's not too bad, right? You do get Jungle Panthers out of it pretty often, so that always makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And you're right, that being able to get the class-specific 3-cost. So that's something, as we're going through a lot of these Discover cards, you always got to ask yourself, I mean, one, like, look at the thing. Like, so 3-cost cards, you just look at the spectrum of 3-cost cards, and how are those? And, you know, there's a wide spectrum, they're okay. But then you got to ask yourself, for any given class, you know, and look at each class, look at the classes you care about. For any given class, are there 3-drops in that class that are especially good? And if there are, then that makes this guy a better sell in those classes.
Yeah, the interesting thing to me for a Druid deck is Savage Roar. I mean, which is like a key card in the combos they use to finish off game. That's a 3-cost. I mean, you could potentially grab that and stash it early on.
Yep. Oh, and right, sorry, I had said 3-cost minion, but it's actually can be a spell. So in Paladin, you can get your...
Muster for Battle?
Thank you, Muster for Battle, yep.
Yeah. Or, Aldor Peacekeeper. Paladin has a lot of really good 3 cards as well.
Yeah.
Even Sword of Justice, not bad. Seal of Champion. All right. Yeah. I'm pretty excited. What are you thinking?
So I think if we're judging it by its optimal scenarios in the deck that most wants it and the class that most wants it, I'd call it average in both Arena and Constructed in those scenarios. But hey, I mean, we give a lot of cards too, so I'd give this guy a 3.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Yeah, because in Arena, I mean, just getting another card in your hand is super valuable on its own.
Yep. And being able to pick according to the game state and what your needs are and what your hand is. I mean, you can take those forces into account, too, more than you could just when you were drafting your deck.
Yeah. Up next, we have the most abhorrent card in the... Abhorrent? How do you say that? Abhorrent?
That's how you say it. I think what you mean to say is adorable.
No! So it is the Murloc Tiny Fin, a 0-cost 1/1, the child soldiers of Hearthstone. I'm pretty sure we had like a big internet campaign about this sort of stuff a couple years ago. This is dirty tactics. You can't be using these guys in war. There's no way they're going to kill anything. You're just sending them to their deaths.
But he's got such a cute little cardboard looking sword in his hand.
Yeah, that's not going to save him when the piloted shredder is coming down on him. Dude doesn't stand a chance. Flavor text. High mortality rate from often being hugged to death. Like, what? Even the flavor text is morbid. They have a high mortality rate, these tiny children? This is messed up, dude. Just saying.
All right. So what do you rate him? The 0-1... Cost 1/1 with no abilities.
Yeah, I don't know. Can I just rate it like demonic or something? Or yeah, I don't know. This is pure evil. Pure evil. We don't have a rating for that, so I'll just give a pentagram as the scores. What do you think?
Oh, man. I mean, what would you rate a wisp? Although he's a wisp that can be buffed by Murloc cards, so...
Yeah, so he has the Murloc type, so I'd give him probably 1 point for that. I don't know, in Arena, though, I'd probably still just give him a 0. Because you're not gonna be popping that Murloc.
That's pretty true. I mean, if you get a wisp, a 0.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if this was done in part to oddly enough, nerf some cards. Like, Murloc Knight can now generate a 1-1, a vanilla 1-1.
Oh, that's true.
Right? And Murloc Knight was deemed pretty darn powerful. If I'm not mistaken, this is the only Murloc minion in the set, so this is their way of nerfing Murloc Knight.
Yeah.
For this set. Just a little bit. Just tiny, tiny bit, but still.
It's interesting because we've seen them do this, or at least what we think that's what they're doing, but we've seen them do that a lot with like Piloted Shredder and stuff like that. It's a very clever way to kind of nerf a card after the fact without having to really nerf it.
Yeah, I mean, they're aware of things like this. They know, and they did the same thing like with Demons when they fixed Bane of Doom. And it got really awesome for a short while. And then they introduced a bunch of crappy demons. It's like, thanks. You introduced these cards so that card got worse. I appreciate that.
Yep. It was a pretty crazy card, though.
Yeah, it was.
All right.
So anyway, ones or a 0 and a 1?
Let's give it a 0 and a 1 to stop the children soldiers.
Man, the coveted 0. We have to stop and take note.
Hey, it matches his cost. You get what you pay for.
That is true.
Yeah. But,
all right. Next up, Tomb Spider. This guy is interesting. It's a 4-mana cost 3/3 beast with a battle cry, discover a beast. So this is kind of like the mech card that we talked about earlier. In fact, it's a pretty direct analog. You're paying about a mana and a half premium on this one versus the 1 mana premium on the gorilla. So this actually comes at more of a premium. Goes in beast decks, not mech decks, of course. But what I like about it is that it's a battle cry to discover the beast. And so that means you don't have to wait on it and you don't have to risk not getting the effect.
Well, the other one is battle cry too. The difference is the other one requires having a mech on the board.
I'm sorry, you're right. I got confused with sorry, you're right.
Yeah, so this removes the caveat and also removes 1 health point on it.
That's right. But I actually think this is pretty darn good. I've been playing this in my Druid deck for sure. It pulls its weight. A 3/3 is a sizable body on the board. Being able to then get some random beast. I mean, in a Hunter deck, you can get stuff like King Crush or your Savannah Lions or Savannah Highmanes. There's such good choices in a Hunter deck. Druid decks have fewer choices that are beasts on the card because a lot of them turn into beasts when you cast them, which is sort of interesting. They start off as just untyped but turn into druids. Still very good in both decks.
Yeah, it's the only official beast in Druid is the little runt, right? The 3/2 mech one? Oh, no, he's a mech. What is... Oh, Mounted Raptor is a beast.
Yeah. Which is pretty decent if you want a chain of creatures giving other creatures.
Yeah.
But it's still not bad. And there's some, you know, good vanilla beasts that still work well with that Druid deck. I mean, I like the Stealth Beast, as I often say. There's some other good ones floating around. You get the Owl I've picked from time to time.
Oh, and Savage Combatant actually is a great card. He's a beast too.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a premium Druid card now.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. So it looks like this is probably going to be slightly better in Arena, slightly worse in Constructed, right? Because it's not relying on synergy. It just kind of has it more built in, but worse stats. Is that about right?
You say better in Arena?
Yeah, where you don't have to rely on synergy, because this thing always fires.
That's sorry, interesting.
Better than the Gorilla, which is the thing I'm comparing it to.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yes, I definitely think it's better than the Gorilla in an Arena deck because it doesn't need the synergy. So it holds up. I don't think we need to give it a 2. And I find it quite strong and constructed. When I use it, it's one of those cards where after playing it a bunch, I draw it and I'm like, oh man, that is a solid hunk of beef that's going to give me another solid hunk of beef.
Yeah.
So I've learned to really value what it constructed.
All right. So in the deck that wants it most, are you saying another five or you think a four?
No, I mean, I think it's a four, but a four is good.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff you want to put in your decks.
Yeah. Awesome.
And I'd say, what, three in arena?
Yeah, that sounds fair to me.
All right, cool.
Yeah, I'll have to try out Beast Druid. I've been wanting to try it, but never actually got around to building the deck.
I have a Beast Druid deck that I really enjoy. I think it's a ton of fun to play. It's actually, at least at lower levels, it holds up quite fine on its own. It's one of my go-to when I want to win some games.
Hey, lower levels are my favorite levels. Count me in. All right, let's jump into rares now. Neutral rares. We have the gem of the deck, clearly, Ancient Shade, the card that everyone freaked out about it at BlizzCon when it got announced, then like 10 seconds later was like, wait a second. Ancient Shade, 4 costs, 7/4. Wow, look at those stats. Battle Cry, shuffle an Ancient Curse card into your deck that deals 7 damage to you when drawn. And to clarify, it deals 7 damage and you draw another card, so it doesn't ruin your draw. But still, deal 7 damage to you. I mean, you're getting some great stats here, but this card looks like a trap, right? Even flavor-wise, it's a trap. It's like, you don't want to be making deals with Ancient Shades. That's going to end poorly. But 4 health is just so flimsy. It's going to die so easily. I don't think you'll ever really get much out of him.
I had this played against me, I think, exactly once. And in that game, it did a great job. It hurt me. The opposing player may have even built their deck around it. I wasn't quite sure what was going on, but they brought it out. They were able to protect it. It smacked me in the face at least twice. That was 14 damage to the face earlier in the game than they should have been able to use something that big. That said, I don't like this card. I don't know that I'll ever play with this card unless there's some sort of crazy tavern brawl or, you know, PvE battle or something. In fact, there's one of the missions, spoiler alert, one of the adventure missions is the opponent takes your deck. And so that was the one I had the hardest time beating on the normal setting. I think I had to try like 4 times. I even constructed a really bad deck and I still couldn't beat it for some reason.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny. I didn't realize that he took my deck.
I knew that
I was playing with some other deck. But I was like, why did they even have me choose a deck? This is so weird. And I'm so dumb because I was like, wow, he's trying to do the same sort of thing I wanted to do. But I didn't even cross my mind. That's really cool.
Yeah, I was putting in some wacky stuff. I mean, I was putting wisps and, you know, those little Murloc babies in there. And yeah. I don't think I put in Ancient Shade, but I probably should have.
See, I think I got lucky because I was actually trying to win all of them with Mill Rogue. Because that's what we featured on the show last.
Mm-hmm.
So it gave him the Mill Rogue deck, but he couldn't figure out how to play it right.
Right.
So he was playing cards really weird, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. But that's what it was.
That's a good idea, yeah.
Nice. All right, so what score are you thinking?
I don't know, man. I'm inclined to give it ones, or at least I was. I may, based on it actually killing me, I may raise it to a 2.
Give it a little respect for that?
A little grudging respect.
You'd give it a 2 in Arena, right? Not in Constructed.
Yeah, probably. There might be a way to make better use of it than I can think of. If you've got a deck that's a lot of direct damage and can kill any minions on board so that it has a better likelihood of living, I don't know.
But can you stop them from dealing direct damage? Because half the spells in the game will just kill this thing.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, so the only synergy I saw people talking about was Fellreaver, because it destroys cards in your own deck, so it could potentially get rid of it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'm on board with ones, and we'll move on with my favorite quote from the comment section of this card on Hearthbone. He is the best against Face Hunter. You will likely die before drawing the curse. There you go. There's no downside. You're going to die anyways.
There you go.
All right, what's the next card?
Eerie Statue. 4 mana cost, 7/7, can't attack, which is amazing,
yeah.
Can't attack unless it's the only minion in the battlefield. So here we've got a situation like the Ancient Watcher, which is a, correct me if I'm wrong, 2 cost 4/5? Is that right? Yeah. So like that, this comes at a health and power premium for its mana cost. Can't attack unless it's the only minion on the battlefield. And that doesn't just mean on your side. That means everything else has to be dead. I don't know how often that's going to happen. So to me, that's kind of blank text. It's like it doesn't exist. It's pretty much that it just says can't attack. So if it says can't attack, that means you want to be given it. You want to be given it taunt. You want to be silencing it. And that's about it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you could explode it with Shadow Flame like you do with Agent Watcher.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. So there are some uses for these cards, and the more of them there are, the more that a deck like that becomes even more viable. I also like that there's some more choices, because with Agent Watcher, there was like that. There was Nerubian Egg on the low end of the spectrum, and now there's this on the sort of high end of the spectrum.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, actually, because Warlock has a lot of the tools to do with that, because a lot of their Warlock, thematic-wise, is Sacrifice, right? Like, they've got the Void Terror that could come in and take its stats.
Oh, yeah. That's icky.
Yeah, I mean, Handlock is already running, actually, a lot of the stuff that you need to get value out of this. So I'm actually not a big Handlock player, so I haven't tried this, but I would be... It feels like it could have a purpose in there, but I don't know if that point if, for most cases, the Ancient Watcher does just as good of a job. You know, is 7 just overkill?
Well, I don't know. 7's pretty big.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's cheap, but it's not that cheap. So if you look at the cost reduction, this has just barely better cost reduction than the Ancient Watcher does in terms of mana points. But if you look at percentage of its cost that you save, the Ancient Watcher is like a bigger percentage off than this is, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the better way of looking at it is. I think it just shows that maybe it's kind of a wash. You know, they have different personalities, but they're kind of roughly equitable. I can imagine a world where you had a deck where instead of two Ancient Watchers, you ran one of these and an Ancient Watcher, so that if you happen to have both in your hand at the same time, you can actually choose what's going to work in the situation or how much mana you'd have on any given turn in order to play one or the other. You know, I think just talking about it right now, I'm viewing this guy in a more flattering light, especially in Warlock. Warlock really does have some tools that make this guy pretty good. Maybe a 3 in Constructed?
Yeah, I could do that.
But then, like Ancient Watcher, I think Ancient Watcher is just a flat-out 1 generously in Arena because it's so hard to do anything with him.
Yeah. He's almost always a dead card. But, I mean, this thing isn't nearly as dead of a card as Ancient Watcher, right? Because if it is the only minion on the battlefield, he can go to town. And he should... Yeah.
But how's that going to happen? There's nothing about the card that helps that happen. Yeah. I don't want to not have anybody else on my side. I think maybe in a mage deck, if you like had this guy out and then you flame-striked, well, but then you wouldn't have anything on your side. Maybe we're back to Warlock and you run a Hellfire or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, let's give it a 1... Maybe even a 0 for Arena.
Yeah, because you have to have something to give it taunt in order for it to function.
It just asks for too much, I think.
Yep.
All right, there we go. So 0 for Arena, 3 for Constructed.
Let's do it.
All right, boom. Next card, Naga Sea Witch. This is a 5 cost, 5/5. Your cards cost 5. Looks awesome at first glance until you start thinking about what it's actually going to be to play with. Right? Like, I don't know, the effect can easily backfire, can increase the cost of cards in your hand. It won't be relevant until turn 10, because that's the first time you'll be able to play this and another card at the same time. I don't know. I don't get it. Seems like a pass.
Yeah, speak for yourself on the first glance. I thought this looked bad from the first
glance.
You're not paying much of a mana premium, which is good, but making everything cost 5, what are you going to cast with that? Like, what favors are you doing yourself? That's going to make a lot of cards most expensive. I would say the curve in most decks has the more cards below 5 than above 5. You're not going to cast something else on the same turn unless it's turn 10. Like, what are you doing with this?
Yeah, I don't get it.
So...
All right, so... I mean, it is still a 5/5 for 5. I mean, so that's got to be worth something, right?
Well, okay, good point. You're not paying, well, you're not paying much of a premium for its ability, but I think its ability is a drawback. So you're paying a slight premium for a drawback of an ability.
Yeah.
So that, to me, is a double whammy. If it were, look, I would rate it higher if it was a 5 mana cost 5/5. I think. I mean, I guess in constructed, I don't know what it would be. Maybe there's some deck that just really, really wants this, but I just can't figure out what that is. 5 is so high that I don't know how you would abuse it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, at best case scenario, you're abusing it to play 2 cards on one turn. Like, that's it.
Right. If it was a turn where you could have cast your 10 mana cost card anyway, then you're just getting this 5/5 and that 10 card cost. And it was like, that's your big 2-card combo.
Yeah. Hey, it helps you overextend. Perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's not bad. I mean, if I could play a 10 mana cost card and get a free, you know, cast my 5/5 for free on the same turn, I'd do it. But it just seems like so much downside and risk around that for such marginal upside.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, it's not a 0, though. It's because it's still a body.
Yeah.
Is it a 2? Is it a 1? What do you think?
I'm inclined to put it in the 1s, but and for both, but I don't know what you're thinking.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I can't see going higher because there's so many scenarios, especially in like Arena and Constructed too, where it's just that cost is a downside. I'd rather just not have the headache of having this card than being like, ugh, I want to play this body, but if I do, it'll mess up my next few turns. Yeah, no thanks.
Yeah, I feel like this card might just be a so-called trap.
Yeah.
Which is the... It's kind of a name for a card that designers put in a set that look like they might be good, but they're bad, and it's figuring that out as part of the deal. I'll also notice that they made this card an epic, which I think we have... Weird, yeah, we have it in the rare section here for some reason, but it's an epic, which means they typically know that it's kind of a weird edge case use. A lot of the modern era epics are used only in special situations.
Yeah. Good point. All right, so let's give it a 1 and move on.
All right. Next is Summoning Stone. This is a 5 mana cost 0/6, which is not a good start. Whenever you cast a spell, summon a random minion of the same cost. Okay. All right. That is more interesting for sure. This is trying to be like that Tavern Brawl that everybody liked, where you would cast a spell and you get a minion of the same cost for free. I think they flat out even said that.
Yeah.
They were sort of trying out the mechanic there. It was well received. So they went ahead and released a card with it. My problem is, you have to be in a very specific deck to use this, which already says that Arena is probably not the right place for this.
Yeah.
Also, spell-heavy decks are often risky. There are a few archetypes that are successful, but you know, normally minions are your great source of repeatable, relatively cheap damage.
Yeah.
So you are already playing a very special deck if you're running a heavy spell deck. That said, I do think there are some classes that can make better use of this. Mage seems like an obvious example, except I still don't know. I guess Freeze Mage can kind of keep things from getting over to the Summoning Stone. But you need to cast, let's see, I'm doing some math here. I think you really need to cast like 5 or 6 mana's worth of spells, preferably spread out over at least 2 bodies, in order to make this worth it.
Yeah, but even then, like, to me, Freeze Mage is so precise in, like, when you need to be using freeze effects and when you need to be casting spells to stay alive.
Yeah.
I don't want to be compromising that by having to cast freeze to keep my stupid Summoning Stone alive.
I think you're right. Master of Disguise, Rogue, I think is the best thing. Because you got Master of Disguise that can give this thing stealth. And then, I mean, how is it going to die from 6 damage when it's stealthed? So if you can stealth this thing in a rogue deck, and rogue deck has tons of spells, including spells that makes casting other spells cheaper.
Wow, yeah. I was thinking Master of Disguise only gave it for one turn, but it does just permanently give a minion stealth.
Yeah, and there aren't too many units where that's as powerful as you would expect, but I think this is one of them. This may even be the flagship for the use of that ability.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. All right, so I'll give it a point there for potential. Arena, though, I mean, it might be a 0, right?
I don't know if it's a 0. It depends on how many. Let's assume it's in the arena deck that wants it, not that you'd have a lot of control over that. So I think you're likely to have some spells in there.
Yeah, but even arena deck, I mean, you don't want to be running many spells in Arena. You just want bodies most of the time.
That is true. And in an Arena deck, it's never going to attack. So you would have to still manage to cast six... Yeah, about six mana's worth of spells after you cast this to break even. And that's not necessarily even compensating you for all the risk and slowness in, in getting there.
And there's so little removal in Arena that the enemy's likely to have something on the board that can punch this for free because it has zero attack.
Yeah. All right, I might be willing to give you that it's a zero in Arena.
All right, let's give it a zero in Arena. Constructed, though, I think it could go as high as a three. I think it has some potential.
Yeah, I want to leave it as a three. I want to see it work, man. But I think that rogue deck, because if you're in a spell-heavy rogue deck and you can plop this down and then Master of Disguise, and then just the rest of the game, every one of your spells brings in a minion too. I mean, imagine casting Sprint. How cool is that?
Oh, man. Yeah, seven cost minion, bring him down.
And then four cards? Yeah. Do it.
Yeah, that's a... Yeah, so... I'll go with three, not because I think he's awesome, right? Because three is still just vanilla. This is like a Chillwind Yeti. I think he breaks even, but he breaks even in a very interesting way that I think is fun.
I agree, and it might enable a deck or at least, you know, a part of a deck's personality that's not really possible otherwise. I'm rooting for it to be a four. I'm just not convinced.
Yeah, I'm not convinced either. All right, next card, the last of the rares. The Wobbling Runts. This was the card I was least certain about before we got the cards revealed. And now that I've played with, I feel pretty certain. It is a 6-cost, 2/6, but Death Rattle summon 3/2/2 runts. So, just to be clear, let's go through the numbers. Combined, that is an 8/12 for 6 mana.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty at least it sounds crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I think the numbers are misleading. I don't think it's really that impactful. The 2/6 is almost irrelevant on turn 6. A lot of times I found myself, my opponent just ignoring it, and me having to force to trade just to get the 2/2s out. But then those guys aren't very relevant either, because they're pretty easy to wipe off the board with something bigger or a spell. I don't know, it never really was impactful.
I actually had pretty good experiences with this card.
Okay.
I think I'm a little more bullish on it than you are. So I agree, it is not an 8/12. And if you look at the history of cards that give other minions on Death Rattle, Blizzard clearly feels that it's not as good as adding up the stats. Because even in vanilla, the Harvest Golem was, if you add up the stats, a 4/4 for 3 mana, which at the time was above what they typically gave for 3 mana.
Yeah.
Then you had like the Haunted Creeper, which gives you what 3/4s worth of stuff for 2 mana, which is way above anything you've ever done. And here they are now giving you an 8/12 supposedly for 6 mana. So clearly that is not how you can process the math. That said, it doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it's not as good as the numbers would imply. In the decks that want this, I think it's pretty strong.
So what are the decks that want it?
Decks that want minions on the board all the time. So I've seen it in that Warlock deck that uses the, I can't remember the name of it, but it's like a 1/1 for one, it becomes a 5/5. Hey, this is pretty good insurance to help make sure you get there. Paladin decks that are going to run competitive spirit like it. Druid decks. I've got, Druid Swarm decks, like it quite a bit because there's a fair amount of Druid cards that buff all minions on the board. And when you can arrange, like you can either wait for it to die on its own or you can throw it at something. And then sometimes you just have decks with cards that buff things. You know, the very first card we talked about today, the big caveat of that card is that you need something on the board to buff. Well, if you're playing cards like Haunted Creeper and this, you will always have stuff on the board. And some decks want that and are positioned to take advantage of it.
Okay. So my big concern with this deck as I was playing through it was something that I noticed was the reason I really like cards like Harvest Golem and Haunted Creeper, which do the same effect, is because they land on the board early and just help keep control through the mid game.
Okay.
And so this guy didn't have that same value to me. But I guess if the point is just to have a body on the board, even if it's not a very good body, I mean, I guess this card is awesome at that.
Well, or as many bodies on the the ground as possible. You know, Frost with Warlord was an original set card, and it's not really played much anymore, but man, in the decks that try to keep as many minions on the board as possible, it blows out the vanilla scale so easily and so often.
Yeah.
I mean, you're routinely getting, if you're trying, it's what, five mana, I think, and you can get a 6/6, 7/7, 8/8 if you try with that thing. You've got all the cards that buff everything. You got Mukhlis Champion that can make good use of something like this. I really do think in the right decks, it goes a long way. I'm not saying it's the best thing ever, but, you know, I'd put it in like a 3 or 4 kind of range.
Yeah. So, I mean, I will go in on you, or sorry, I'll go in on the high price with you in Arena, because I think in Arena, absolutely, just getting bodies on the board and trading for days, awesome. And Constructed, if you're having better luck than me, all right, I'll follow your lead. What do you think?
Definitely a 3 in my mind. The question is, does it raise itself to a 4? And I haven't played with it enough to be able to say it's earned a 4, but I think it might. So I'm okay giving it a 3 with an asterisk that it might be a 4.
All right, 3 on both scores?
Yeah, I don't know in Arena. Actually, in Arena it's slow, but I do still think it's good. A 2/6 isn't bad, and then when you eventually get 3 2/2s after that, that's even better.
So let's do a 4 in Arena, 3 in Constructed.
Sounds good.
Awesome. All right. Before we jump into Legendaries, I wanted to make a quick note. If our voices sound different, it's because we're actually recording the rest of this episode a week after everything you've just heard so far. I wanted to give a little disclaimer because now this episode's really late. It's been a while since our last episode. We had a previous host. We had an episode in between these that was supposed to come on. He was a pro player from Germany, but he canceled on us, so this got a little delayed. And then while we were recording the first half of this episode about a week ago, I came down with the flu midway through recording, so we had to just abort the whole project and wait for me to be able to get out of bed again. And here we are, Scott, a week later. Do you feel older? Do you feel wiser?
I'm so much wiser. These card reviews are going to be so much higher quality.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's be honest. We're redoing Archthief Rafam, because I think the flu got the better of me. But last time we did it, it just went off on a wild tangent that was just like, I was face-palming afterwards. So I'm glad we get a chance to redo that card. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, my last time I was a little lukewarm on this guy, and it was like I insulted your mother.
I know. I don't even really like the guy, but man, I was defending him like he was my brother. So I blame the flu, but here we are. So I'm very sorry for the large gap in the episodes between last time and this time. But good news, Christmas miracle. Scott and I are recording the next episode right after we finish up this one, which is all the class card reviews. And we're going to be releasing that on Christmas morning. What? Our present to you. So 2 episodes this week. So, hey, that's better than nothing, right?
I like it.
All right. So, but let's keep going. Let's dive into legendaries. Archthief Rafam. Oh, this guy. All right. So he's a 9 cost, 7/8, with a battle cry, discover a powerful artifact. And that artifact, you get to choose 1 of 3. And I discovered this, Scott, since we recorded it. The 3 are in fixed places, so the opponent can actually see which one you take.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they don't randomize the order at all, which definitely seems like a bummer. That seems like hopefully something that could change.
That's kind of weird.
Because part of it is the guessing games of your opponent guessing which one you took. But the 3 cards, they're all 10 cost, and they can either give a minion +10/+10, fill your board with 3/3 minions, or deal 10 damage randomly to opponents. So, first impressions, I mean, there are a lot of fun, powerful top deck cards in the game. So, I mean, this guy has competition, right? Because even Varian Wrynn, that warrior top deck card, had trouble getting in because he was so late game.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say the one thing that I like about this guy is the versatility. Because a lot of legendaries are so niche that they only work in one type of deck, if they even work in any type of deck. But this guy does feel like, hey, you could probably put him in any sort of late game deck, and he has a place there.
True. If you're willing to spend 19 mana across two turns.
Hey, when you're top decking, you got mana to spare.
It's true. When you're top decking, that's the time and the place. Which may mean, I mean, that's often a flag for him being better or a card being better in Arena.
Yeah, that is very true. Yeah, because, I mean, being able to give something 10-10 in Arena when people are top decking, the chances of them top decking removal to get rid of that thing is almost impossible.
And with exactly three artifacts that you get to choose between, doing a Discover means that you do actually get the artifact of your choice each time.
Yeah, that's true. And they're all strong effects. I know they're 10 mana, but, I mean, they can be pretty game-changing.
Totally agreed, yeah. +10/+10 on a minion on the board is probably my favorite of the bunch under normal circumstances, because you'll just use that to punch face and at least half kill them, if not completely kill them.
Yeah, totally. Well, because, I mean, if they don't kill Archthief or Fom, which is probably pretty possible in Arena, I mean, that's 17 damage next turn, right, to the face.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then the next turn they're dead if they don't kill it.
Yeah.
The next turn.
If they don't kill a 17/18 minion.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, but... I mean, he is really expensive, he's really slow, and he's not crazy, right? He's not Dr. Boom, right? Where Dr. Boom comes on the board and immediately changes the board state in your favor.
Right, he comes on the board, and you know, Dr. Boom doesn't have taunt or anything, but he does have a disproportionately high amount of attack and health on the board for his cost, and there's those mini crackle effects that can happen. So that's a lot more immediate impact than waiting another turn before you can start to recoup some of, because otherwise this guy's just cost inefficient on the first turn.
Yeah. Yeah, because he is a 7/8/9, which is 2 mana over.
That's right.
So you're almost paying 12 mana for that, for the artifact spell. Mm-hmm. Pretty crazy. All right, so what do you think it's got? I mean, it sounds like we like him more in Arena, but he's still not, like, he's not amazing there because he's still so late.
Yeah, he's a dead card in your game. Most turns and some games just won't go that long.
Yeah.
In which case, he was just dead weight and a drag on your deck. So, I don't know. I'm inclined to give him 3. What are you thinking?
Yeah, 3 seems reasonable because 4 is something special, and this guy is just a good late-game card in Arena.
I think it's playable 3. In Arena, yeah.
Constructed, though, I mean, there's not, like, bonus synergy or anything here. You just struggle because these late-game cards just don't work in Constructed.
Right. Even if you have some of the cost reduction for the main form, you don't get the payoff until the artifact.
Yeah.
So, you know, something like Thorisson that affected only him before he was cast, or an Innervate, there's not great ways to accelerate him because you'd have to accelerate both halves of him. So, yeah, there's really no synergy, not even the usual synergy that other cards get.
Yeah. So, are we talking, like, down to a 1 or sticking at 2?
I mean, I'd probably say a 2. I think he can still tilt the game in the late game, but I just don't know, like, what deck he fits into that wants him.
Yeah. I would agree. All right, so let's go with a 2.
Yeah, so, and it's interesting because I heard a lot of people talk about this guy and how awesome he is. And ultimately, I think he's just kind of overrated for his cost.
Yeah, I agree. He's super interesting, and he is very powerful, right? When you combine his cards together and just look at how much power you get from putting one card in your deck, it's almost unmatched. But you have to pay a ridiculous amount of mana to get that full power.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump to the next one, who I'm feeling ready to defend, Scott. So let's do this. Bran Bronzebeard.
Yep.
Oh, wait. Oh, you're supposed to read this card out. You read it.
All right, Bran's Bronzebeard. He's a 3 mana cost, 2/4, so almost up to par for vanilla. And your battle cries trigger twice. That's pretty cool. It reminds me a lot of that Baron Rivendare that had this effect for Death Rattles.
Yeah, but he was a 1/7, so I don't know if this is actually better or worse.
Yeah,
both 3 cost. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he is cheap enough at 3 that you know, I don't think what you want to do is put this guy on the board and then just hope that he's going to live forever and all the Battlecry cards you cast for the rest of the game are going to trigger. I think what you're probably looking at is one big turn, and if you're lucky, you might get a follow-up turn. It could be that your battle cries, depending on what they are, might help protect them, or you know, possibly you'll bring out like lightning rods that need more attention than him, and you have another turn.
Yeah, that is very true.
One thing to keep in mind, though, is that a lot of the Battlecry cards don't actually have effect when they're triggered. There's still a lot of great Battlecries that do get doubled from him. You know, like things that give plus one, or whatever it may be. But things that, say, give Taunt or Divine Shield or Destroy a Minion, I mean, these sorts of things. Anything that targets and gives those things, giving Divine Shield twice to the same minion doesn't really do anything, or destroying a targeted minion doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, because when I first saw this card, I thought the way it would work is, when you play Big Game Hunter, you could choose and target Dr. Boom, and then choose and target Ironbark Protector, but it just fires it on the same target twice.
Right.
So there are definitely some effects that don't double well, but the thing I love about this card, even more than Baron Rivendare, which was just an okay card, is how many really good cards there are that people are running anyways whose effects do double. Stuff like Antique Healbot, which we actually saw in last episode when we did the Rogue Mill deck. We saw it suddenly healing you for 16 health. And Cold Light Oracle in that same deck, suddenly milling for 4 cards instead of 2. You're only paying 1 stat for that effect. So, if you get the smallest of proc, you could get the stupid little Elven Archer proc, and I'd say this guy basically breaks even at that point.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think it was a little lukewarm on this guy, but I think a lot of that was a reaction to people thinking that this is, game-changing card and breaks the meta and everything. And I think he's good. I don't think he's the best card in the set, for example.
Ooh, really? Okay. What did we give a 5 to? I'm trying to remember, because since it's been a week now. So what do you think is a better card in the set?
That's a great question.
We gave Gorilla Bot a 5, but that's it so far.
Keeper of Olduman is probably my personal favorite.
Okay. All right. So we'll be talking about that on the next episode. So the thing I really like about this, because I tried to think about why I like this card so much more than Baron Rivendare. And the first thing is Death Rattle. There's a lot of more impactful battle cries than Death Rattles in general.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I really like about this card is the immediate impact. Because even with Death Rattle, the thing that you want to use had to be on the board and exposed, and the opponent could see it coming. But this, I just love the element of surprise that you can hold him and the Battlecry card in your hand, and it comes out of nowhere. And there's really nothing they can do to stop it.
I agree with that. The 3 cost, being able to cast that before another big, impactful Battlecry, that is pretty darn cool.
Yeah. And he is a lightning rod. Like you mentioned, if you play another card that's a lightning rod, they have to choose which one they're going to take down.
Yeah, and to be fair, it's probably, if you're casting Battlecry minions after this, it's probably not them, because some of their value was on being cast.
Yeah.
So they probably are not going to have as big of bodies on the board. But some of the buff effects, or if you bring out something that gives a buff and taunt, those sorts of things, that can help protect them quite a bit.
Yeah. So I will say, let's go into our arena score. What do you think of our arena? Because obviously it's much harder to reliably get something off of him there.
Yeah, I said a 3. And the thought is that you're not paying too much of a premium for his ability from his stats. A spider tank is a 3/4, and this guy's a 2/4. That's not too bad. And you're likely to have some battle cry sprinkled around in any given arena run.
Yeah. All right, so 3 seems fine to me. But I'm letting you have 3 there, Scott, because I'm arguing for a 5 on Constructed. Can I sell you on a 5?
Yes,
Well, that was easy. All right.
I think originally I was aiming for a 4, but I think he is better than that. I wouldn't call him the fiviest of fives, but I do think he's a pretty strong card.
You're just being a hipster, Scott. Just because other people like him, you can like him too. It's cool.
Is that okay?
Yeah, it is okay. I know you're up there in Seattle. Oh, so cool, hipster. Put on your vinyl record players. All right, so let's do 5 then, because I strongly believe in this card. I've been having a lot of fun with it. It works in so many different decks. That's the other thing. Death Rattle deck is almost a singular type of deck. You could have Hunter Death Rattle, Warlock Death Rattle, sure. But Battlecry, there are good Battlecry cards in basically every popular deck out there. So I just love how versatile this guy is.
Yeah.
So if you haven't tried them yet, listeners, try tossing them in any deck where you have even a few solid Battlecry cards. He's really good.
I want to use the Battlecry on the Unearthed Raptor so that he gets multiple copies of Death Rattle.
Of Death Rattle. Oh, no. That would be incredible, actually. On that Nerubian Egg, boom.
Yeah.
Create 2/4/4s.
That would be pretty good.
Glorious. All right, let's talk about a legendary that's not so glorious, but does have a Battlecry effect. Hey, could work with Bran Bronzebeard. At least Starseeker. A 4-cost, 3/5, so Senjin Sealed Master without the taunt. And in exchange, you get Battlecry, shuffle the map to the Golden Monkey into your deck. And we'll explain this one real fast. That is, I believe, a 2-cost card that you play, and you draw a card and shuffle the Golden Monkey into your deck. Which is a, I forget how much that costs. A 5-cost 8/8, I believe?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have it handy. I know that it's highly cost efficient. I believe it's got taunt. Oh, it's a 4-mana cost 6/6 taunt.
Thank you. All right, 4-cost 6/6 taunt. Battlecry, turn everything in your deck and hand into legendaries.
Yep.
So, here's the thing. That sounds really cool, right? It's very fun, very cool. You're going to get, in theory, multiple copies of legendaries that you have. Oh, it could be so fun. But it's not even guaranteed to help you, right?
Like, oh, I would say, I'm cold on this card. Because, all right, Josh, if I said I get to play a deck of my choice and you get to play a deck of random legendaries, who do you think is likely to win?
Almost certainly you.
Right, because... I mean, we've talked about that before, even. A deck of all legendaries isn't great. Now, admittedly, in the end game, once you have a chance to jump through these shenanigans and you're top decking, that might be an upgrade because you get to replace all the cards that were in your deck to help you get a good start that don't pack the same amount of punch in the later game. On average, that card quality, or at least the sort of oomph of each card, is probably going to rise quite a bit.
Yeah. But
it still doesn't seem great.
Yeah, because, I mean... For every good legendary, there's at least one really bad legendary.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're throwing Millhouse Mana Storms in your hand or Lorewalker Chose, even like, I mean, Blood Mage Thalnos is fine because you're drawing a card, but late game, he's not impacting the board at all.
Mm-hmm. And you get some stuff like, you know, the Beast or King Mokla, which can be good, but they also have some drawbacks that sometimes are worse than the benefit you're getting from them.
Yeah. So this... Definitely seems like a card. I want to do it once, right? I want to go through it. I'm actually running it in the Rogue Mill deck that we played last week because Andrew? Oh, I hope that's his name. I should check. I'm checking while I'm talking. Because he sent me a message and was talking about how he thought that was the other win condition the deck needed. That it really needed. It was Bradford Grant. Sorry. Not Andrew. There's been like 20 Andrews on this show lately. It's a safe bet, but it's Bradford. He sent me a message saying how that was the second win condition that the deck really needed because it's just so hard to rely on solely milling. And so I'm trying to do that. It's really hard to go through all that because you have to draw her, play her, draw the map, play the map, then draw the monkey, play the monkey. And that's when you get the payoff. Like, that's almost as many cards as you'd normally play in a whole game.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably down to your last... Statistically speaking, you're down to the last eighth of your deck, give or take. Which is about the last 4 cards. Now, sometimes it'll be faster, but sometimes it'll be later. And because any one of those steps that shuffle a card in your deck, what if that's the last card in your deck?
I actually sent Bradford a screenshot... Because I, in the very first game that I played it, I milled all the way down to the end, and my last 2 cards were Bran Bronzebeard and the map. Yeah. It was just like, I mean, it's cool because I got that combo, but the game was over at that point.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty low on this because in Arena, your chances of digging through and getting to those cards is really low.
Yep.
I mean, but we can't discount. She is a 3/5/4. That's still, I mean, it's only 1 stat off vanilla, so she's not worthless, right?
She's not worthless, but you are playing a sub-vanilla card. But you're right, I typically only knock off 1 point for being one stat point off. So yeah. I would normally give that a 2 if that were just a vanilla creature.
Okay. So, I mean, in Arena, do we give it a 2?
Yeah, I kind of want to give it a 1 on principle because I don't want to jump through all these gymnastics.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you just don't want to get your hope up during a game. Like, you don't want to be relying on that.
Well, and so, okay, let's say that you do draw the map. What do? Are you gonna sink 2 more mana into it?
I mean, you have to, right?
Yeah, but you know, you may or not see the payoff. So you're following your, it's sort of following good money with bad, as they say, right? You're good mana with bad in this case.
Yeah. All right. So constructed, do we go with 2 as well, or does it drop down to 1?
I feel like the stakes are a little higher in constructed. There's no real synergy here. I mean, there's like bronze. The brand Bronzebeard Battlecry synergy, I don't think that's real.
Yeah, it technically exists, but it's not worth a point. Let's give it a 1.
Yeah, nobody's going to play this.
Yeah.
Not in a real deck, not a competitive deck.
Yeah. Someday, there'll be a Tavern Brawl that makes it worthwhile and fun.
Yeah, and so I have to say, with all these that I've seen so far, I really do feel like most of these are kind of overrated. At least a lot of people were kind of hyped for a long time, like, oh, it's not that bad, you can make it work, oh, it's great, oh, I did it, and you know, no, don't do it, it's a trap. And even like the stories that you can tell where you got some marginal value, I think you're sort of ignoring how much you sunk into it in the other game instances.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Yeah. All right, what's up next?
All right, the next one is Reno Jackson, a 6 mana cost, 4/6. So here we're about mana and a half above vanilla in terms of cost for the battle cry. If your deck contains no more than one of any card, fully heal your hero. So, wow, yeah, a lot of people love this guy. It is interesting. I think he's more viable than I originally expected him to be, because when I saw that, I'm like, well, you're taking a huge hit in deck quality by not putting 2 ofs in there, because you're not going to be as tight. You're not going to be as, you know, on premise, you're losing a lot of your synergy potential, but a lot of people are playing them. And I will say there's a lot of games where I didn't realize I was playing somebody of a lower deck quality. You know, I didn't realize they're just playing one ofs. And then all of a sudden they whip out the Reno and I'd gotten down to 4 and now they're at 30. I'm like, well, huh. And they don't win all those games, but they have won some of them that I felt like I was on a trajectory to win.
Yeah.
Of course, maybe I wouldn't have been on a trajectory to win if they would have been playing a tighter deck. So it's hard to say how much it really helps.
Yeah, it's interesting. I could see, as we get more and more cards, especially if you're playing something like almost like a zoo type deck.
Yep.
Your need to have very specific cards isn't really important. If there's 2-3 cost minions that are fairly similar but with slightly different battle cries or something, mm-hmm. like you mm-hmm. could just run one of each and do just as well, I think. If you're not relying on certain combos.
And there is a slight benefit to playing different cards. So for the most part, you want to, you know, play 2 of everything so you have a tighter concept of more synergy. But there are some cases where playing different cards, like splitting up your 2 ofs and having, like you said, 2 kind of different one ofs that fill the same role, because then you have more choice. So if you happen to draw both, well, if you drew both and they were the same, you really don't have any variation as to which to play. But if they're slightly different, it's possible one of them is slightly better in whatever your current situation might happen to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you do get that going for you a little bit.
Yeah, so I will say he's definitely better in like an aggro heavy meta, right? Because this exists to deal with face hunters and people like that that are going head on. Although I will say, I got to brag a little bit. I was playing a mech mage, I think, or mech rogue. I can't remember. One of those yesterday. Dude played Reno Jackson, healed up to full, shadow stepped into his hand, healed up to full again, and I still beat him. It felt good. So I went through like 90 health on him, and nice. It didn't matter. Yeah.
Well, you know, and that just goes to show a lot of times they're so busy worrying about Reno Jackson and worrying about all the life they're going to get that they never get board control. I had another game like that recently where I got somebody really low and, you know, they brought out Reno Jackson. I'm like, well, okay, but I still did 20 to them the next turn and killed them the following turn, and they still didn't offer any resistance.
Yeah. So there is definitely a place for him, because I have lost to him many times. But yeah, so I think the most interesting thing about this card is he's decent now. And I think it's going to get better over time as there are more and more cards, especially legendaries that are one-offs naturally, that are worth running, that you can put more one-offs in your deck and not get as punished for it.
I totally agree. It's one of those that's going to get better over time.
Yeah. All right. So Arena, I mean, Arena, you're pretty likely to have mostly one-offs. Does that make you like him there more?
That's a good point. I mean, if your deck is all one-offs, then I think he's great because you're guaranteed to get that effect and you're not really making any compromises necessarily. Yeah. If you had synergy or if you had duplicates, it's not really for synergy. It's just because you thought the card was good probably and you picked two of them.
Yeah.
I suppose, especially if you get them offered early.
Yeah.
Then you can choose to just take one-offs every time.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to say a four. What do you think?
Four. Holy cow. I would have said a three, but man, I'll roll
three?
With you.
All right, let's go. I mean, all right, so do you think he's better? Do you think he's better in Arena or Constructed? How about that? Let's do a three and a four.
I think he's probably better in Arena. Because Constructed, the competition is so much more fierce. And I think you're compromising your ability to have a tight synergistic deck concept.
All right, let's compromise there. I can get on board with that. Four for Arena, three for Constructed, and then with the caveat that I think he's just going to get better over time. I think he could get it. He could get as high as a five when there are enough cards, especially enough legendaries out there that it's not you aren't punished for playing him.
That's true. And in Arena, as each set comes out, you're getting more diverse choices anyway. You're getting naturally fewer duplicates.
That's true. All right, let's jump into the last legendary, which, Scott, spoilers, are you going to think that one's overrated too?
No, this is the one guy I really like.
Okay, tell me all about him then.
All right, Sir Finley Murgleton. He's a one-mana cost, 1/3 Murloc, with a battle cry of discover a new basic hero power. So, and this is interesting because you, in our show notes, were giving me some grief that I had said, what was it, the Sideshow Spell Eater, I think, was really bad.
Hold on. Let me give you a direct quote, Scott, because as soon as I saw how much you like this guy, I was like, wait a second. All right. So I went and dug up the old review and copy-pasted. This is Scott. Keep in mind, we're talking about Sir Finley Murgleton, whose ability is get a new random hero power. Scott said, quote, "You must really hate your own ability if at deck building time you think that stealing another random class's ability will be an upgrade." What's going on, Scott?
All right, here we go. I'm cracking my knuckles. All right. So there's a number of differences. And I still think that Sideshow Spell Eater is just garbage. It's really, really hot garbage.
I'm not arguing that.
Yeah, and I don't think this guy's great, by the way. I think he's a lot of fun. And I like that he exists, and I would be totally willing to use this guy, whereas I would not ever be willing to use the Sideshow Spell Eater. So some of the differences. First of all, Sideshow Spell Eater comes at a 1-mana premium for his effect, relative to his stats, whereas this guy's and it's low-impact body, so I don't know how much it's really worth, but he's a 1-mana 1/3, which is a little above it's sort of right on line for what you'd expect for a vanilla, because you get a 1/2 or a 2/1, but it usually comes with some perks, and so here you get an extra toughness. But to me, the battle cry would have been that perk, so I still think it's a good value to get the extra toughness and the battle cry effect. Secondly, Sideshow Spell Eater, you don't get any choice in what you're going to get. It matches your opponent's power, which is maybe good, maybe bad. But here you get a chance to choose one of three, and so it. If you have like a, let's say there's two powers that you'd really like, Sideshow Spell Eater only gives you a 22% chance to get one of those, but Sir Finley gives you a 64% chance to have at least one of those two choices in your discover choice. So 22% chance of getting what you want with Sideshow Spell Eater, 64% chance with Sir Finley. And if you raise it to three powers that you're willing to take, it goes from 33% with Sideshow Spell Eater to 82% with this guy. You're almost guaranteed to get what you want. To me, this is like the fixed version of Sideshow Spell Eater.
Yeah, but how many classes or how many decks out there do you want a different hero power? Because I'm thinking, like, stuff like Priest, like, okay, you want heal. You don't want something else. And, like, yeah. Paladin, okay, you need the tokens. Shamans, you need the totem.
Shaman, I would say, is one of the candidates. If you have a totem synergy deck, cool. But a lot of times, the randomization of the totems and the fact that they're generally just kind of passive and sit back and may or may not help you, a lot of people would rather deterministically, say, have a 1-1 or be able to do 2 damage to somebody's face or, you know, target 1 damage anywhere on the board. Those are often considered better. The rogue hero power may or may not be one that you want. It depends on your deck. The same thing with the warrior hero power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are probably the ones that are most suspect. Generally, people like the priest ability, especially later in the game when they can afford to fire it off a lot. It really helps with trades and keep themselves alive.
Mm-hmm.
But druids is pretty good. Mage is pretty good, et cetera, et cetera. But I would say rogue, warrior, shaman are probably the most likely suspects.
Okay. I agree with that. I mean, I will say I'm kind of angry at this guy because he's been popping out of my Murloc Knight like crazy lately, which is so frustrating.
Yeah, that's a good point. They did some nerfs for the Murloc Knight, you know, with that 1-1 tiny fin and this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So you kind of like him, but how much are you liking him?
Well, I think I might be inclined to give him a 3. In Arena, he's pretty low impact, and I don't know how much increasing the hero power is going to do for you, especially in, you know, like 6 of the 9 decks where your hero power is fine.
Yeah.
But it's rarely going to be a downgrade unless you just love your current power more than, you know, you just think it's the best. So, I don't know, a 2 or 3 in Arena, and probably a 3 in Constructed, because the idea is you'd be using him where he's going to have the most impact.
Yeah, that makes sense. You sold me with the Shaman example, too, because, I mean, there's a really fun aggro Shaman deck out there right now that has no need for their hero power. So this might be fun in there.
Right, and if you could replace it with the Hunter power, for example, holy cow.
So what are the chances of, if I want Hunter, what are my chances there?
Well, it would be, I guess, 3 of 8, so 37.5%.
All right, that's honestly, Josh, not bad.
Yeah, that's not bad. And then if you're willing to take, say, Mage or Druid on top of that, or even Rogue on top of that, I mean, if you're willing to take one of those 4, you're talking about, like, 90%.
Okay, yeah, that's not bad at all. All right, I'm on board with those scores.
Cool.
Cool. All right, let's jump into the community section, which is going to be sparse this week. Questions, nobody sent any in. iTunes reviews, nobody sent any in. Donations, oh, but wait! Christopher Amundsen, who I probably butchered that, sorry.
Amundsen? Hopefully we got it right at least once.
Yeah, we'll just pronounce it every possible way. Christopher, he signed up for $5 a month through Patreon. Which is really cool. And thank you very much. He sent a really nice note. I'll read it out real fast. Christopher says, "If I just got into Patreon with $5 a month. Sorry I haven't done this sooner. Apology accepted. A longtime listener loving the Happy Hearthstone. Now go buy some packs or something else you want. Best regards, Snakebite, a.k.a. Christopher Amundsen from Norway." So thank you very much, Christopher. We really, really appreciate your support. This is so cool. We love when people send in one-time donations, but signing up for a monthly donation, you become my best friend. I love it.
You are now officially Josh's best friend.
Yeah. You can put that on your resume. I'll be a reference. That's cool. Yeah. He's very smart with his money. There you go. I can reference. All right. Let's jump into the Dust Bowl, which is the other part of the donations we get where it's basically Jake Crawford only. But he sends 7 packs a month that we open up, and we record the live stream. It'll be in the show notes at GameDiplomat.com. But this is getting outrageous. This is now 3 months in a row. Jake only sends in 7 packs. We've gotten a legendary every single time.
That's insane.
Yeah, the odds are, I don't know the odds, but that is incredible odds. So thank you, Jake, for sending us legendaries every month. I hope you keep it on it forever.
Never tell me the odds.
Yeah, there you go. Ooh, what a timely reference with Star Wars.
I just saw it last night.
Oh, good man.
Sorry, the rewatching the original trilogy.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, before this episode, you said you didn't see it, but that's cool. I'll roll with it. If you want to lie to everyone else, that's fine, Scott. So my dad was asking me, which order did you watch them in? Did you watch the new ones, then the old ones, and then the newest?
So I'm showing them to my wife. It's just the original trilogy, and I'm not even bothering with the prequel trilogy with her. I suppose if I – and that's because I barely have enough attention to finish – from her to finish the original trilogy.
Yeah.
If there was somebody who I thought was going to be in it, like my daughter, when she's old enough to like understand what she's seeing, I may do Machete Order.
What is Machete Order?
You ever heard of Machete Order? Okay, so you watch the first two movies. And then when the Empire Strikes Back ends and things are in kind of a cliffhanger state, you just learn some shocking news.
Yeah.
You go back and you skip episode one entirely. You watch episodes two and three. And then you go back and watch Return of the Jedi with all this new context.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And episode one is just not even a part of it anymore.
That's crazy. You could just skip that entirely and everything works just as well.
Yeah, the guy who, I don't know, quote unquote, invented this order, I guess he says that the most of the characters that are there, the ones that were introduced are introduced, you know, they're still around later, they're fine, you don't really need that introduction to them. And then there's a lot of disposable characters, and the you know, it wasn't a very good movie, the plot lines are kind of disposable, so yeah.
All right. So, so we're going to dust episode one and keep all the rest of them. but cards we're saving from this batch. So I was kind of torn because I opened Pyroblast, which I've never actually owned, and I'm super excited to have. But I also opened Keeper of the Grove, which I just love that card. So I want to save both. Is that possible? I don't know. If you had to pick between those two, what would you pick, Scott?
I use Keeper of the Grove much more often, but
Pyroblast is just cool. I'm keeping Pyroblast.
Yeah, it's such a high impact card.
It is, and I still actually have not cast it ever yet, so I'm keeping it so I can cast it sometime.
Yeah, it ends games.
Yeah,
it does.
I have been on the receiving end of that many times. All right, what are you keeping?
Let's see, I think the gold ice block, man, that's a nice little, nice to have card in a freeze mage deck.
That is cool. So actually, does the little secret effect have any sort of golden glimmer or anything?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, just the card art itself.
Okay, cool. Card of Dust, though. Sorry to say it's the legendary, because it is the notorious Milhouse Mana Storm.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, unfortunate. Which, actually, I already had a copy of, so I've now opened... I haven't opened a ton of legendaries in my life. But I've now opened 3 Lorewalker Chos and 2 Milhouse Mana Storms. I love those guys, apparently.
Yeah. Well, Milhouse Mana Storm's a good one to get a dupe of because you can feel a little more self-righteous, you know, getting rid of it. Because if you got like a second, I don't know, Nefarian or, you know, just some nice, well, I guess that was Black Rock Mountain. But, you know, you just get some like high-end, useful legendary. You feel bad disenchanting it.
Yeah, it feels like a waste.
Yeah. And this one, you're like, good riddance.
Yeah. He deserved it.
Yeah. Not that I condone, because I like dusting the first or dusting a playable copy of a card to me, it just hurts my soul. I don't do it.
Yeah.
But I would probably dust the silence myself.
Okay. Yeah. So you're not getting a lot of dust for that one, but you're not going to be playing it ever either.
Well, you wouldn't be getting a lot of value from it if you played it. So
that's true.
It's kind of a wash either way.
All right. Let's jump into card of the week. Are you ready for a sweet song?
No, the question is, are you ready for a sweet song?
Oh, I'm so ready. Serenade me, Scott.
Wintervale, has it snowing? The gold cards are glowing. The card of the week is a purple genie playing in a Hearthstone Wonderland.
That made me so happy. I love it. Christmas. It's Christmas time. I'm so happy. And now we get wonderful songs about genie. So I'm thinking I know what the card of the week is then.
It might be the genie of Zephyrs.
He's from this set, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He's I think one of only 2 epics in the set.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But he is a 5 mana cost, 4/6. It says, so, you know, not too bad on stats. After you cast a spell on another friendly minion, cast a copy of it on this one. So I have not had a chance to play with this guy yet, but I I'll tell you, I'm really looking forward to building a buff deck, along with like the Dragonkin Sorcerer and a few other key cards. Maybe Paladin, maybe Priest. I might try both. But man, I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, because that could get scary real fast. If you're throwing down like Blessing of Kings and whatever the +3 in Divine Shield is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to throw in those sisters, like the...
Oh, the Valkyr.
Yeah, that's right. The Darkbane. Because they're both spider tanks, but when you target them with something, they either do 3 damage to a random enemy, or they give themselves Divine Shield, depending on which sister it is.
Yeah. I mean, so there are definitely some nice cheap spells out there that you could combo this with. Let me tell you my concern, Scott. I just always have a concern with cards that rely on, like, spells that target minions. Because it just seems like you're asking to get 2-for-1, like, with when you use a lot of those cards. I don't know. That deck scares me that you're talking about right now.
That's true. Power Word Shield doesn't sacrifice a card, right? Yeah. It just makes the thing that's on hard to kill. But if they want to take it out, you know, congratulations, so be it. Blessing of Wisdom is another one. As long as you have a minion that's stuck on the board for a turn, you can throw it on there for 1 mana attack, get your money's worth, and then turn a card that might not be a lightning rod into a lightning rod. So I actually like doing that alongside something that I don't want to die, and I make them have to choose what to go after.
Oh, yeah.
So I've seen some people put on like their biggest minion. I'm like, well, they already wanted to kill that minion. And so if they had the firepower to do that, they were already going to kill it. I spread that stuff out. I make them attack a target that's not otherwise the optimal target.
And this guy automatically spreads out those spells.
Yeah, that's right. So there you start to get some of the value from it. So I don't know how good he's going to be in practice, and I do think that deck is not likely to be a good deck. I haven't seen anybody playing it. I think it's probably for a reason, but it does sound like a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. Man, a Paladin deck sounds super fun. Yeah, mm-hmm. So I mean, hey, you're only paying 1 stat for that effect. So, I mean, as long as you proc it once, seems awesome.
Yeah, and if you're playing, say, a Paladin deck with Blessing of Wisdom, Blessing of Kings, and maybe that new +3... attack and Divine Shield card. I mean, there's some really good opportunities there that, you know, if you're playing 6 buffs, that's generally enough to me to put it in. And this thing only being a half mana premium for its cost, sure, do it, try it.
Yeah, I mean, worst case scenario, kind of like you mentioned, he is a lightning rod. I mean, because as long as he's on the board, it's scary for your opponent.
Yeah.
You can't leave him on the board for long just because you could do something crazy with him.
That's right. That's right. So you bring out this card and they may have to just jump through hoops to kill. And it's like, well, I don't have anything in my hand, but they didn't know that.
Yeah. All right. So what are we talking here? Because I'm going to admit he came up in my arena yesterday and I got too scared. I didn't take him.
Well, yeah. So in arena, it's going to be harder, and especially depending on what class you are, it's going to be harder to get things to target him.
Yeah.
Right. Ooh, you know what'd be interesting? I just realized, put him in a hunter deck and put the hat on another minion and you get a copy on him, and then both copies will go to your hand when they die.
Oh, he's a hat maker. He can make tons of hats over and over again.
Oh my god, I just realized that. That's funny.
That's super cool.
Yeah, so I don't think he'd be too strong in arena. Maybe a 2. I mean, like we said before, if he's only 1 stat cost off, he can't be that bad.
Yeah, that's very
true. And they're well-balanced stats. 4-6 is a good composition.
Yeah.
And in constructed, I think I'd be willing to give him a 3. I want him to be a 4. I'm not sure that he is. What do you think?
I mean, so in the deck that wants him most, even if that deck isn't the best deck.
Well, true. Okay.
I think he's got to be a 4.
Yeah.
At worst, because he is going to be a linchpin of that deck.
Yeah, I mean, if the second he snags a Blessing of Kings, he's a rock star.
Yeah. And he's only 1 stat off, so I mean, I have no problem giving him a 4.
Yeah, and you throw that +3/+0 and Divine Shield on him, suddenly he's a 7-6 with Divine Shield. That's all pretty good.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear how that deck goes with the Valkyr Sisters, too, because those are solid cards. And if you get enough of those kind of cards that work with those spells in there. Because if you're doing... Oh, man. I mean, you could try it with something... No. Never mind. I was going to say, like, Mage, because Antonitis, you'd be throwing fireballs in your hand every time, but Mage doesn't really have any buff spells.
Well, Mage has spare parts, and he would get copies of the spare part buff, but that's pretty small. I'd almost rather use the... Well, yeah, so the Lightbane Sisters, Lightbane and Darkbane, they could probably like the spare parts, because that'll really, I mean, like their triggers are bigger than the spare part effects.
Yeah, that's true. That might be so in some sort of like a mech mage deck. That could be kind of
fun. Yeah, yeah. Because I don't know if there's a whole, this isn't a big enough theme to support a deck, right? This is maybe 10 cards with the buffs and the, 10 or 12, between the minions and the buffs. And then you need 18 cards with something else going on.
Yeah. All right. That sounds fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Try it.
We'll try it out. All right. So we're going to have full show notes along with links to all the stuff we talked about today, all the cards, all of our thoughts, all of our ratings. You can check it all out on GameDiplomat.com. Just click on Hearthstone at the top. You'll find it. As always, though, we'd love to know what you thought of the show and what you'd like to see added to the show in future episodes in the future of 2016. You can find us on Google+, Happy Hearthstone, on Twitter, I'm at jaugustine, or you can email me, ajosh@outlook.com, or just leave a comment on the blog, gamediplomat.com, and we'll talk it there. If you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us, like awesome Christopher did up there. You can find more info at gamediplomat.com/donate. Scott, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @slant76, and that's S-L-A-N-T-Z, first initial, last name. Slant76 at Twitter.
Awesome. Scott, thanks for being on the show twice this week.
Yeah, and once more to come.
Once more to come. So thank you all for visiting the Happy Hearthstone, having a little fun with us. Don't forget to stop by Christmas morning as well, when we'll have the next episode up. We'll see you next time.
Happy holidays.
So to me, so forgive my analogy, Scott, because I don't mean what I'm saying. To me, it's a little like Dr. Boom, where it's just...
You're killing me here. It's like every good card you've ever seen, except totally different.
Hear me out.